The Empty Sleeve, written by J.C. Holsey, narrated by J.C. Holsey. Dedicated to all those folks who have made it their responsibility to help those in need, whatever the need may be. These folks are what I call helpers. Other names for them could be almost any profession, or they may not be employed in any profession. They may be everyday ordinary citizens. Some people call them heroes. Whatever their title may be, it is with much gratitude that I give a hearty thank you to all those who are the helpers. This story was going to be about a young girl helping an outlaw. The title was going to be The Helper. However, once I started putting it together, it became a completely different story. This isn't the first time this has happened. In fact, it happens often when I try to plan my stories ahead. My characters don't follow directions very well. The story titled The Helper was about a young man who goes off to war, losing his right arm in one of the last battles of the Civil War. The helper in this story is a kind doctor who also had only one arm. The further I got into the story, I felt the title wasn't a good fit. Then I had a picture flash through my mind about a young one-armed Confederate veteran walking down a lonely road heading home. Therefore, the change in the title to The Empty Sleeve. I hope you, the reader, approve of the new title. Columbus, Muskogee County, Georgia, 1865. My name's Clayton Sinclair Webb, and this is my story. I've been on my own since I was 12 years old. My parents were killed when our house burned down. I'd have been killed, too, if I'd have minded my pa and not went coon hunting with my best friend, Albert Murphy. I was going to live in the barn so as I wouldn't have to go live in an orphanage. I didn't realize at the time that the orphanage didn't even want me. My plans of living in the barn came to an abrupt end when I found out the bank was going to foreclose on the property. I knew Pa was having a hard time, but I didn't realize he was so far behind on the payments. Murph said I could come live with him, but his Pa didn't care too much about having another mouth to feed, so that squashed that idea. I stayed in Mr. Wiggins' livery stable until he caught me. He said I could come and stay with him, but only on a temporary basis. One day I was taking a walk to clear my mind and try to figure out what I was going to do. I didn't realize I'd wander so far from town until I looked up and saw an old empty shack. I knew by the location that it was almost a mile from town. I turned around and started back down the road I'd just traveled when an idea hit me. Why not stay in that old shack? Sure, I ain't never seen nobody in it. I'll just stake my claim to it and make myself at home. I talked Mr. Wiggins into hiring me to muck out the stalls at the stable. It wasn't much pay, but it was enough to buy food and a new pair of pants every now and then. I fixed up the place, at least as best I could. The roof wasn't leaking anymore, and I figured that was the most important part of the building. On my way to town one day, I saw a girl sitting under a big cottonwood tree with her face in her hands. I could see right away she was crying. I walked over to her and knelt down beside her. "What's the matter?" I asked. "Are you hurt or something?" She raised her tear-streaked face, and I found myself looking into the clearest blue eyes. I didn't notice all the tears and streaks they had made down her cheeks. Her eyes were as clear as a mountain stream. I finally got control of my thoughts and asked again, "Are you hurt any place?" She shook her head. "Then why are you crying?" She spoke, and her voice was like smooth velvet. I watched her lips as they formed each word, and I wondered if those lips felt as smooth as they looked. "There's nothing wrong with me, at least not physically." Then I asked again, "Why are you crying?" "I'm crying for my big sister." "What's wrong with your sister?" "Well, there's nothing wrong with her either. I know I should be happy for her, but I'm going to miss her a lot." "Did she die? Is that why you're crying?" "Oh, goodness, no. She's getting married." "Oh," I said, not completely understanding. "Thanks for stopping and asking me if I was hurt. That was a very kind thing to do," she said, looking up at me. "Well, if you're okay, I'm going to scoot on down the road." "Why?" "Why what?" I asked. "Why are you in such a hurry to get to town?" "No reason, really," I said. "Maybe I'll stay here and visit with you. That is, if it's all right with you." "I think I'd like that very much," she said. That's how it began with Peaches Perkins. Every time somebody mentioned Peaches, I had to caution myself not to take it personal. They weren't talking about my peaches. They was talking about the fruit. Peaches and I became sweethearts that day, even though we were only teenagers. She was a real firecracker when it came to keeping me to herself. I didn't mind because she was all the woman I needed. On my 17th birthday, I decided I needed to go fight for my country. I'd heard all the stories about the exciting life of a soldier and all the traveling and seeing the country. I found out after I enlisted those were just stories the leaders made up to get fools like me to sign up. When I went away to fight for the Confederate Army, Peaches promised she'd wait. She had had a rough life growing up as a sharecropper's kid. She was the youngest of seven kids, so she had witnessed a lot of abuse by her pa. He was a drunk that scrounged and found odd jobs to halfway feed his family. I promised Peaches that if he ever laid a hand on her, she was to tell me, and I'd make him sorry he was ever born. She was 16 when I left for the war. I'd just turned 17. We spent our last night together in the old deserted line shack that I called home. We made promises to each other and plans for our future when I returned. It was a long 3 years. It wasn't anything like I had envisioned. The unit I was in didn't even have regular uniforms. We had to wear what we started out with. I'd never seen so much bloodshed and maimed bodies in my whole life. There were rumors on the morning of June the 2nd, 1865, that the war was coming to an end. Our commander said he hadn't received official word yet, and he said, "Until I do, the battle goes as planned." It was one of the worst battles I'd been in. Bodies littered the field until all you could see were corpses stacked on top of one another. I was fighting with a blue coat when I felt something strike me from behind. The next thing I knew, I was waking up in the hospital tent. "What happened?" asked a young man lying on the cot next to me. He didn't answer. When somebody pulled the blanket up over his face, I understood why he hadn't answered. I tried raising myself up and was immediately pushed back down from the pain on my right side. I tried lifting my hand and found I couldn't. I turned my head and looked as best I could at my side. I didn't see my arm. I reached across my body with my left hand and felt nothing but a big bandage where my arm should have been. It was then that shock set in. I began shaking and trembling all over. Somebody rushed to the side of my cot and covered me with another blanket. He raised my head and pressed a cup to my lips. "Go ahead," he said. "Take as much as you can. The shock will go away if you'll just relax and take a deep breath." "What happened?" I asked him. "You were wounded and lost your arm in the last battle of the war." "Yes," he continued, "the war's officially over. Actually, it was over this morning, but we didn't get word until after the battle you were in." I lay there still shaking, but was beginning to relax. The way I figured, it wasn't going to do me any good to worry after the fact. I did wonder what I was going to do, though. Here I was, just 19 years old and a cripple. I'd never heard of a one-armed cowboy or a one-armed farmer. What was Peaches going to think about having a one-armed feller? I lay there in that cot for 3 days, feeling sorry for myself. Then one day a doctor in a white coat came and sat in a chair by my bed. He lay his hand on my knee and said, "Look at me, son." I turned my head and looked into a pair of the kindest eyes I'd ever seen. Then I noticed something else about him. His left coat sleeve was pinned up. He only had one arm. "You're feeling sorry for yourself, aren't you?" he asked. I nodded my head. "You may not believe me, but I know exactly how you're feeling." He raised up his empty sleeve in case I hadn't seen it. "How did you? I mean, you're a doctor, ain't you?" "Yes, I'm a doctor, and I don't mean to sound like I'm bragging, but I'm a pretty good doctor. How do you... How do you manage with only one arm?" I asked. "I only lost my arm. I didn't injure my brain. God gave us a brain to figure out little problems like losing an arm. You learn new ways of doing things, things you never thought were possible. You now find that anything is possible if you only try. You're probably wondering how you can be a cowboy, aren't you?" "How did you know?" "This is something else you may not believe, but I know several one-armed cowboys. They work around their handicap and get the job done. You can, too, if you'll make up your mind to do it. That missing an arm is an opportunity for you to use a part of your brain that you never used before. How about it? You ready to get up out of that bed and begin the first day of the rest of your life?" I hesitated. "Don't question your decision, son. Just do it. Come on. Give me your hand and I'll help you get a start." He stuck out his hand. I reached and grabbed hold. He immediately began to pull. I had no choice but to sit up. "Now," he said, "swing your legs over the side." "That's right. Now I'm going to help you stand. Don't try to hurry. We got all the time in the world. There you go. How you feel? Can you stand on your own? I nodded. He released my hand, and I suddenly felt an empty feeling as if I'd been drawing on his strength and not mine. You okay? He asked. I nodded again. You don't say much, do you? He teased. I make a noise when I got something to say, I told him. I bet you're wondering how your girlfriend's going to accept you. Am I right? How do you know all these things about me? Because I've been in your shoes. You can't have any doubts or questions that I haven't had. You just have to make up your mind. It's that simple. Now you want to try and walk? You know you didn't injure your legs. I took a small step, then a bigger one. I walked across to the other cot, then turned and walked back. You're doing fine, the doctor told me. There's something else I think I might be able to help you with. What's that? I asked. Have you given any thought as to how you're going to dress yourself with only one arm? I looked at him, letting him know with that look I hadn't thought about it. I'm going to give you some important pointers on how to do it without anybody helping you. You want to know? Of course I want to know. That'd be a very important thing to know. He spent the rest of the day teaching me all sorts of things that were going to be very helpful. I was beginning to think I could do this. Maybe I could even be a cowboy. What did I have to lose by giving it a try? The thing that was really gnawing on me, though, was Peaches. Would she be able to accept this new me? I asked the doctor that very thing. If she doesn't accept you, then she didn't really love you to start with. I do know this, he continued. True love accepts us as we are, with all our flaws. True love accepts unconditionally and overlooks our shortcomings. If this young woman won't accept you as you are, then she isn't the one for you. I continued to get stronger each day, and I was learning to do things with my left hand, which was quite a chore because I'd always been right-handed. I learned to shave, comb my hair, but I think my greatest accomplishment was dressing myself. When I felt like I'd learned all I could inside, I decided it was time to go outside. Roping and saddling my horse seemed an undaunting task, but I remembered what the doctor had told me. If you set your mind that you can do something, then you'll be able to do it. I know that horse got tired of me messing around with him, but after a few failed attempts, I finally got the job done. Now a new problem came up. How to mount the animal. When you've done something a certain way your entire life, and then you have to do it differently, it becomes quite a challenge. I felt lucky in one respect, if you can call anything lucky about having only one arm. Anyway, I still had the arm that I'd always grabbed the saddle horn with, my left arm and hand. The only thing that seemed to bother me was my balance was off. The first time I pulled myself up and threw my leg over the saddle, I kept going all the way over and landed on the ground. The horse turned its head and looked at me, making me feel even more foolish than I already did. I was making real good progress, in my opinion. Although each day brought up a new challenge, I faced each and every one of them with enough determination that after a little while, I was overcoming each one without a lot of work. The doctor and I continued talking and visiting almost every day. "I'm extremely proud of you, Clay," he told me one day, "but I think you need to consider going home." I hung my head and sat for a minute contemplating what I just heard him say. I looked up into those kind eyes of his, and there wasn't any way I could tell him my true feelings. He looked at me, and then, as if he'd read my thoughts, he said, "You don't need to be afraid. It's just another day in the rest of your life. You can't run away from it. Sooner or later, you're going to have to face her." But what if she doesn't want me?" I stammered. "We talked about this early on," he said. "If it's meant to be, then it will happen, no matter what we do or say. What will be, will be." "All right," I told him. "I'll leave first thing in the morning." "I'll be here to see you on your way," he told me. I had a restless night, filled with images of battlefields, and suddenly the scene would change to the green fields of home, and there in that little shack with Peaches. Then her face would change into a bluebelly with a bayonet, telling me to leave before I take the other arm. I finally fell into an exhausted semi-conscious state, and then it was time to get up. I dressed in a brand new Confederate uniform that the doctor had provided. It seemed a bit odd now that the war was over, I received a uniform. I packed my few belongings into a burlap sack and stepped outside. The doctor was there waiting, just like he said he would. "Good morning, Clay," he said. "I took the liberty of having your horse saddled and fitted with a few meager supplies for your trip. I'm only sorry it isn't a better mount." He stuck out his right hand, his only hand. I grasped it with my left hand, my only hand, and hung on as if I was trying to draw from his strength. "I can't begin to tell you how much you mean to me. You've helped me in more ways than I could ever put into words." I released his hand, looked into those kind eyes one last time, turned, and climbed aboard my horse. I looked at the road that lay before me and remembered again something the doctor had told me. "It's just a road like any other road. The only difference is this time you have a new direction to travel. However, I am confident that you will be successful wherever the road leads you." With a renewed spirit and a new body, I gave the horse the knee and we left the post at a gallop. I rode along unfamiliar roads and passed through unfamiliar towns while on my journey, yet I was somehow not disillusioned. I had but one goal in mind. That was to see my darling Peaches and proclaim my love to her. The people in the towns that I passed through watched, or should I say gawked, as I passed by them. It was as if they had never seen a one-armed man before. I passed through them mainly because I was in a hurry, but I also felt an uneasiness the way they stared at me. It probably would have been a lot easier to have gotten a room at a hotel, but as I said, I had this feeling that I wasn't welcome. I didn't have a lot of trouble setting up a camp by a small stream. There was plenty of grass for my horse and plenty of sticks and limbs to build a fire. It was also good practice for me. It was beginning to feel as if I had been born with only one arm. Then the truth hit like the jarring of your body falling off a bronc. I realized I would never have what I was born with, never again. The next morning when I woke, the horse, just as the doctor had predicted, gave out on me. At least he had a good final meal with all the green grass. I'd have to do the rest of my traveling on foot. I collected my meager belongings and walked away from the dead horse. I'd been walking for almost a week when I began to see familiar things that told me I was getting close to home. The closer I got, the more nervous I became. Thankfully, I had all the things the doctor had told me stored in my memories, which I could call on at times like this. Face it head on. It's just one more step as the new you. You're the only one that can make that step. There's no one to take it for you, so go ahead. Step out proudly. I recognized the town where I'd been born and grew up in. It didn't look as though it had changed any at all in the time I'd been away. I stopped by the livery stable to see old man Wiggins. I stopped just shy of the door and stood for a minute looking in all directions, taking in all the old familiar sights. "Clay! Clayton Webb, is that you, boy?" I heard a voice that I hardly recognized. I turned toward it and saw a stooped gray-haired man hobbling toward me from inside the stable. "Sure is good to see you, boy. You're one of the few that came back from that god-awful war. Too many lives lost over nothing," he said to nobody in particular. Then he looked directly at me. "I see it took its toll on you, but thank the good Lord you're alive. How you doing, Mr. Wiggins? Is business good?" "About the same. Ain't much changed except a lot of the boys didn't return," he said, repeating himself. "Is Murphy's Cafe still in business?" "Oh, sure. Like I said, ain't much changed. I figure you're wanting a piece of peach pie, am I right?" He looked at me. "And then you'll be wanting to see one Peaches Perkins." "You read my mind. How is Peaches? The pie or the girl?" he teased. "I'll be back after I get that pie." "Sure thing. You go ahead." "You're probably wondering why I'm going to eat a piece of pie when I should be heading to see my girl. Well, I'm trying to work up enough nerve to do that very thing, and eating a piece of Murphy's pie used to always do that for me." I opened the door to the eatery and stepped inside. It was empty. "Hello, Murph," I said loudly. The door from the kitchen opened, and there was one of my oldest friends standing in the open doorway. He looked, then looked again as if he was trying to focus his eyes. "Clayton Webb, you rascal, you! It's about time you showed. I was beginning to think they made you a general and you was getting too high class for us ordinary folk." He walked over to me and stuck out his hand. I grabbed it with my left. It was then that he noticed. "Oh," he said, "I'm so sorry, Clay. Are you okay? I mean, is there—" he was stammering, trying to think of something to say. I'm doing great, Murph. I just need a piece of peach pie, if you got any. Oh, sure. Just pull one out of the oven. Grab a seat, and I'll be right back. He turned and disappeared through the door. I sat down at a table, the memories flooding my mind. This is the same table that Peaches and I used to sit every time we came in here. Yeah, this is it. There's our initials I carved in the wood. Here you go, Clay. I put an extra dollop of butter on it just the way you like it. He set the plate down, then took the seat across from me. Have you been to see Peaches yet? He asked. Now that's a silly question. You wouldn't be sitting here with me if you went to see her first. Sure is good to see you, buddy. I missed you. How is she, Murph? I looked up from the pie. She's been waiting on you, he said. You do realize the war's been over for almost 3 months. She's been in here almost every day asking me if I heard from you. I'm afraid, Murph, I said. What if she won't accept a one-armed me? Do you really doubt her that much? That girl idolizes you. She's been chasing all the would-be suitors away with threats of what Clayton Webb was going to do to them when he gets home. Well, I said as I pushed the empty plate back, I may as well get to it. Wish me luck. You got it, buddy. See you a bit later. Sure, I'll see you later. I walked back to the livery stable and said goodbye to Mr. Wiggins. Good luck to you, Clay, said Mr. Wiggins. Thanks. I nodded to him and walked away from town. The Perkins farm wasn't but a couple of miles from town. I stopped in the front yard and looked around. There didn't seem to be anyone around. I walked to the front door. The place sure was run down. I hope when I have a place that it never looks like this. I knocked on the door and it was opened almost immediately. It was Mrs. Perkins. Well, hello, Clay. It's good to see you finally come home. I reckon you're looking for Peaches. She ain't here, she said. She don't hardly spend no time here no more. Don't know where she goes, but like I said, she ain't here. She closed the door. I stood staring at the door. Where could she be? Then it dawned on me. The old shack. That's where she'll be. I took off walking so fast I almost made the mistake of going too fast. I headed to the little place that held so many memories for me. I was about 100 yards from the shack when the door flew open, and there she was running toward me. I stopped, just looked, a more beautiful sight I had never seen. My beautiful Peaches, her blonde hair blowing wildly in the breeze. She almost knocked me down when she grabbed me. She began planting kisses all over me, on my face, my chest, everywhere. Oh, Clay, darling, you're finally here. I've been waiting here every day for, well, it seems forever. Now I don't have to wait no more. You're here. Move back a little bit and let me get a look at you. She turned me loose and stepped back. I stood letting her take a good look at me, the whole me, the half me. Her eyes moved slowly up and down my body. Her eyes finally come to rest on my empty sleeve. My heart seemed to stop beating, my breath caught in my throat. Oh, darling, she said as she stepped forward and embraced my right side, empty sleeve and all. I'm so sorry. I don't want or need your pity, I told her. Oh, Clay, she said, I'm only sorry that you had to endure this alone. I wish I could have been there with you and suffered instead of you. I love you more than life itself. You really mean that? Of course I mean it, she said. I watched so many of my girlfriends suffer when their fellows didn't return, and I prayed so hard every day for you to come back to me. I may have come back, but I left a piece of me on that battlefield, a very important piece. I tried to explain. It's nothing compared to what you could have lost, Clay. What I could have lost, Clayton Webb, you're alive. Do you think I would love you less because you only have one arm? I can't believe you'd think our love was that weak. We've got the rest of our lives to live, and together we can overcome any obstacle that gets in our way. I love you. I love you, Peaches Perkins. Will you marry me and change that name to Peaches Webb? Of course I'll marry you. It never entered my mind that I'd marry anybody else. Oh, and I have a surprise for you. She was grinning. What's the surprise? This little shack belongs to us. What do you mean? How did that happen? Well, I checked the land office and found out nobody owned this property, she explained. I talked to Mr. Plummer into deeding it over to Mr. and Mrs. Clayton Webb. He said it sounded like a good present for one of our returning veterans. Besides, we're the only people he can remember ever staying in this place. It's ours, free and clear. Let's go find the preacher right now and make that deed legal. Epilogue. Clay and Peaches were married that same day. Their life hasn't always been an easy one, but together they carved out a place in history. They built one of the most successful cattle ranches in the territory. They had 6 children, 2 boys and 4 girls. Clay learned to do everything necessary to raise his family and to teach them about love and perseverance. Clay did invite the doctor who had helped him so much to come for a visit. However, the doctor had to decline as he was getting too old to travel. Clay received word that he was ill and on his deathbed. He left his wife and children to make the trip that he dreaded to make. He was glad that he was going to be able to see his helper one last time and tell him how much he loved him. After the funeral, Clay returned to his home and family, feeling a loss and yet a certain strength, a strength that he received as he gripped the doctor's hand the last time and said, "So long," to his helper. Here's a little poem I wrote that I thought went with this story. No place to go. My papa scraped a living on a 40-acre farm, but he had it kind of hard because he had only one arm. He fed the pigs and he milked the cow. I don't know how he did it, but he did it somehow. He chopped the wood and he fed the chickens. Then he carried the wood into the kitchen. The meal that Mama served, he set and he ate. Then he got up to go, because it was getting late. He headed for the field after he hitched the mule. That wasn't something he learned in school. He was self-taught about everything he did, and he tried to pass it on to his 6 kids. That was probably harder than anything he did, trying to teach how to live to his kids. We were stubborn and ornery to boot. To tell the truth, we weren't worth a hoot. But Papa didn't believe in using the switch. He laughed and said all his kids made him feel rich. We all grew up, and we left our home, and left our papa to be there all alone. When Mama run off with the neighbor man, he just said, "Don't worry, it's all God's plan." I traveled back home when I got the dough. I asked him how come he don't leave. He laughs and says, "Got no place to go." This has been The Empty Sleeve, written by J.C. Halsey, narrated by J.C. Halsey. Copyright 2015 by J.C. Halsey. Production copyright 2015 by Outlaws Publishing.